Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
People used to ask me, who are you? What do you do? And it was real easy. I'm a DJ. I'm a worship pastor. This last 4 years, it's not who I am anymore. I have stopped being a doer. I'm learning how to be a son of God.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I are
a part of it.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. We're all prone to do it. When we meet someone new, we almost always identify ourselves by what we do. I'm a student. I'm a mom. I'm a CEO. I'm an electrician. We find our identity in the tasks that make up our lives. And that was certainly true for Greg Bugbee. From an early age, he was a doer, an entrepreneur who enjoyed having his hand in multiple projects. And then literally overnight, his life changed. He was no longer able to do what he'd always done. So who was he now? What was his identity? And where would it come from? This is chapter 42 of Epic, Greg Bugbee's story. So you were a doer in life?
Yes, very much so.
Describe that.
So since I was young, I just have always, even as a little kid, I was delivering papers. I had Kool-Aid stands.
Were you an entrepreneur?
I was always, and okay. I didn't know that because I was raised in a ministry home. My destiny, 9 generations of pastors, there was an assumed destiny that I was going to be a pastor.
Huh.
And I actually set out in that direction, but I started in music. I was about 12 in my first group that I was singing, and then went on to college to study to be a pastor, but started a now, this is going to date me, but started an imperial-style group, which is basically a quartet with a band. And for me, in the school that I was going to, in the denomination I was part of, that was not a good idea. But
that was outside of the box of
music?
It was
outside of where they were at that time, okay. For sure. It was Christian rock and things were just starting to come. And my passion became real for music, and music doesn't pay well, so my entrepreneurial side helped support that habit.
Huh.
So my dream was to be a musician. That was like, since I was far back as I can remember, it was being a musician. But I fell in love with a young lady, got married, we had a couple of kids, and on one of my tours, I was gone for 8 weeks to Australia. When you have 2 little kids, very little, mm-hmm. 8 weeks is a lifetime.
Yeah.
And I came back from the tour, and I had been feeling like I don't want to miss this. So I was at a real crossroads to choosing that direction of my life or family. And I defaulted to family, and God had great plans for the family, and 2 more kids came along, and I was also raised in a home where my mom was a daycare mom. And so my wife and I, we worked hard to make sure mom was home. That was our choice. And so I would do, when I say I'm a doer, I would do whatever I needed to do to provide for that family unit. And sometimes that meant I was DJing 3, 4, 5 nights a week. I was on staff at a church. I was running a garbage company that I had started. And I found a lot of satisfaction in those 4 quadrants of my life, those 3 businesses and my family. And yet God was still letting me do music in all these different arenas, so I was getting the best of all the worlds. I've joked now with the events of the last few years that I've lived 150 years in this 57 years of being on the planet. So
so when did you first start to notice there was something going on with you physically?
So it was December 14th. I was doing a wedding reception in Terre Haute, Indiana. And so I was there doing this wedding. And I've joked for years that I was going to, because I was going to die on the dance floor or leading worship. My dad actually passed away on the platform at church leading worship.
Oh, my.
Because he was a worship leader his whole life. So, I mean, and I never meant it. It was a joke, right? So I am, if you've been to any of the wedding receptions I do, I'm very interactive where it's appropriate. So I was leading the cha-cha slide, which I've led a gazillion times since it came out in 2000. And there's a part in the song where it says, how low can you go? Can you go down low, you know? And so I'm going down low, and I all of a sudden something came on me and hit me, and I couldn't get back up. And so I dragged myself over to my DJ station, kind of put it on autopilot. I was feeling so sick. I called my pastor friend and said, I am sick, and I think I'm going to need help getting home. And so they drove from Danville to and got there about the time it was going to be over, and finished up. They helped me pack up, drove me home. And for the next week, I thought I had this terrible flu is what I thought, but it just did not. It was brutal. And we went to the doctor, got some meds, and it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. Finally, Christmas Eve, my wife had had enough. She took me to the ER, and the doc said, we don't even understand why how this guy is even walking in here and talking to us. So I had apparently was in severe kidney failure and extremely septic, and they almost lost me. They said if I had waited another day, they probably would have. So I got put on all of the, I call it the transmission flush. You know, they hooked me up to everything, and I spent at least 2 weeks in, I called it Hotel Carl, and they brought me back from the grave, really, literally. And come to find out, long story short, I had some other systemic issues with prostate and bladder that was actually the perpetrator of the whole thing, and it caused damage to my kidneys. So my kidneys were very damaged. I have about 15% kidney function, and it's decreasing pretty steadily. I mean, it's had some leveling off, but in the last 2 months, it's starting to head to where I gotta consider next steps. So that began the journey. That was part one. Part two of the health journey was a year ago summer. I was walking out across the street from my house. There's a little pond there. I go and feed the fish, and it's my meditation place and hangout place. And I just started experiencing extreme arm pain, and turned out I had was having a heart attack. And they friends of mine picked me up, brought me back to Hotel Carl, and I got another stay there where they determined that my heart was very damaged and that I needed to have triple bypass surgery. So we did that later that summer.
Was that connected to the kidneys?
No.
Okay.
Two separate things, but okay. It's not good to have them both going at the same time.
Yeah.
So the kidneys were still bad, but the heart is more of, I think, we have a huge history of heart in our family, and I've been aware of that, and I've tried to be wise in some areas. The being so busy and running both ends might not have been wisdom, but diet I tried to be pretty smart about, and some of those things, thinking that I could avoid it. We lost my mom at 46 to heart. My dad had quadruple bypass at 51, and I lost a couple uncles to heart. So it's very real in our family, DNA. So anyways, I had the triple bypass surgery July 31st, and the next day I had a massive heart attack.
After the surgery?
After the surgery that caused very bad damage to my heart. Irreparable damage is what they say, except for God has a bigger say if he chooses. And so the bypass surgery was designed to avoid heart caths, because when you get a heart cath, they pump you full of dye that is bad for your kidneys.
Yeah.
So this was a choice that we made to try to spare my little 15% kidney. And ultimately, all three bypasses over the next couple months, all of them failed. I had blood clotting in the heart, so I got another stay at Carl for weeks to solve that problem. got a nice defibrillator. I'm part of the bionic continuum now. And ended up having a couple more heart casts, the things we were trying to avoid going into the next year. So now I just navigate each day with 15% heart and 15% kidney.
Wow.
So it's interesting.
Which I assume necessitates a big change in your doer personality.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, from the logistical, for sure. My team on the DJ, I'm so grateful for that God gave me this gift to the DJ business, because I've tried to understand how I would navigate this, having a regular job.
Mm-hmm.
And who would, what boss would tolerate what I've had to put up with as my own employee. But my team stepped up and took over roles that I usually did, and we made it through that year. So that slowed down for me right away. That year I just kind of, you know, the team stepped in. It was helpful to me from a perspective, because I'm kind of a guy, I like to think I'm a good leader and a team motivator, but I realized I still am kind of a guy that likes to have my hands on things. So stepping away from that was hard. I was also on staff at the church that brought us back to Illinois. They were gracious too. Amazing. They just embraced Christine and I, and it was God's timing that we would be with this family, this group of people, at the time that we had to navigate some of these things. And so ultimately, I did stand down last year.
Tell me about the physical challenges. What's it like day to day, and what's long-term prognosis?
Being the doer, some people have called me the Energizer Bunny. So one of the things that I've, you know, I'm 57 years old, and a lot of my friends think that I've never acted like my age as far as my energy level. So I'm learning what it means to be 57. I don't know if it's 57 or my health, but I don't have the energy. I very much shut down or can't get started. You know, one of the things I've had to be intentional about is continuing to have some things on my schedule that make me get out of bed, because my body many days doesn't really feel like it wants to do that. But one of the things that's been a byproduct of this is I've had to really reevaluate my identity with not doing the things that I've been doing. I mean, I've been doing Christian music for over 40 years, maybe 45, and in and out of avocational or vocational worship leading for 40 years, DJ business for 32 years. And I find satisfaction. People used to ask me, who are you? What do you do? And it was real easy. I'm a DJ. I'm a worship pastor. And there came this last 4 years, that's not who I am. That's not who I am anymore. I have stopped being a doer, and this isn't even a word. Is it a beer? I'm learning how to be a son of God.
That change, learning to find his identity in who he is instead of what he does, turned out to affect everything from the way Greg prays to his perspective on life and death. We'll hear part two of his story coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. Thanks so much for listening. If you are enjoying today's show, head to our website and check out other chapters of Epic, and subscribe using your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. We believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story, and we would love to hear about yours at myfaithradio.com. Today, we're hearing Greg Bugbee's story. Here's part two.
People used to ask me, who are you? What do you do? And it was real easy. I'm a DJ. I'm a worship pastor. This last 4 years, that's not who I am. That's not who I am anymore. I have stopped being a doer, and this isn't even a word. Is it a beer? I'm learning how to be a son of God, a child of God. And so DJing is an assignment to the Son, or having the garbage business was an assignment that he privileged me with, but it wasn't the end game, or the, you know, they were means to resource my family and to connect with people. And so those are assignments as a son. And so for me, I have come to a place where I have just, I've found my identity in being I also realized this is the biggest thing. I guess this is probably the silver donut for me in all of this, for my spiritual life. I realized that a lot of my faith pre all of this 4 years ago, that I was kind of a narcissistic Christian. And I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I found myself praying, God, bless me, bless my life, bless my business, bless my ministry, my. And my prayers have changed now. My prayer now is, God, use my life, use my business, use my family, use my ministry that you've called me into, or the assignment that you've given me, the DJ business, to communicate your kingdom. Even use this health thing. God can heal me in one of two ways. He can take me, which is ultimate healing, or he can fix me. And he's done it in the scripture, and he's done it recently in this country, in this world. But that's not my prayer. What my prayer is, God, use, and this is my prayer for my friends and for my kids. I do this every day when I get up in the morning. I pray that God will use circumstances, successes, failures, bring people interactions into my kids' lives, into my friends' lives that will bring them closer to him. And so it's a different kind of praying than I ever used to do. You know, it's not my ministry. It's not my life. I'm not my own. That we as Christians, we use all those cliches all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
How many times have we heard we are not our own? But do we really, really believe that when it comes down to I feel like I do better than I ever did. And I'm not afraid about tomorrow. I have seen in this 4 years, not only my Job story, I always use this thing. I think that the book of Job, for anybody that has ever read it, is the story of all of us. And some people think it's a story of be obedient, faithful, and you'll get all your stuff back. And I just don't see that story that way. I see it as Job was being faithful to what he knew about God. And by the end of this process, he really knew God. And that's where I feel like my life has been. I have had the privilege of being born into a believing family, even though some of the belief systems were by far broken. But at least I was pointed towards Jesus. And my journey has been, I've done with at seasons of my life what I've known to do with that information. But God just is continuing to complete my Job story, that I can hear from him now like what Job did. Job made this great statement, and it's awesome. He said, I knew a lot about you, but now I really know you. And that's kind of what's been happening to me those last few years. It's just changed my perspective completely.
I'm curious. There had to be a time of transition from the time that you began to realize your new health reality and laying down and letting go of some of those things. Was it fairly easy to let it go, or did you go through a period of struggle in, no, wait, I need you to heal me because I got to keep doing, or?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, and I'm not saying that I'm probably completely finished with that. Being a doer and a leader, just at the heart of my DNA, even in having conversations with my wife, it's funny because I shared this with her a couple weeks ago. I have tough days, and I know she has tough days. So as being the leader of my home, you know, and our business is a family business, a lot of my kids are in the business, and even the ones that aren't in it participate in it. And being a spiritual leader in my home, finding the place that I can be discouraged in front of my wife and my kids has been a challenge.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a fake. So that's been a part of, that's a transition that's hard. There are some days that I get up and I live as if this is not happening in my life. It usually catches up to me, you know,
physically
within a couple of days. And I realize it. And I even said it this last weekend. We had the whole family was together. And I said, I still haven't figured out the balance. I'm still figuring out. And I'm talking the physical, I don't have, lows with my spiritual. I tried to explain it to somebody last week. I'm a man of faith that navigates reality. And it's challenging because as a man of faith, I know my life is in God's hands. He has a plan. His plan is, like I said, is the Job story, not only in my life, but everybody that surrounds my life in a ripple effect. His end game is to all of us to know him better and to know him deeply. That's God's end game. But how do you navigate that when you go to the doctor and he gives you a report about what's going on and you're still living on this faith plane? You know, because one of the things, the doctors, you know, you don't even know what kind of impact you're having on the doctors you're visiting. The last time I was at Barnes, the doctor said to me as I walked in the door, he said, Greg, he says, we're talking about you at Carl and here at Barnes. And I said, well, what does that mean? And he said, well, he says, there's two categories usually for a guy that's going through what you're going through. You're either in bed or you get up and go to the restroom and then you get back in bed. And he says, you're out DJing and leading worship and doing things. And he says, we've created a category. You're not normal, he said. So I just say, and I've joked with him, and I mean it. It's not a joke for me. I just said, it's God factor. Mm-hmm. God decided the day that I arrived on planet Earth, and he'll decide the day I leave. I believe that. I really
Absolutely.
Do.
Physically speaking, what's the road ahead?
I'm balancing, and I've been back and forth with kidney doctors for the last month. I've taken all the classes for dialysis because he keeps saying your numbers say you should be on it already. But fortunately, my doctor is not just going by the numbers. He's going by my physical presentation. And I'm not displaying some of the symptoms that would, you know, automatically say, we got to get you in. But I'm all ready. So I'm ready to hook up to that whenever that has to happen. As it relates to heart, I will find out more about where I am. I have a trip back to Barnes in St. Louis in 2 weeks. The problem is, in the physical, heart and kidneys rely on each other. So this heart problem is probably why the kidneys are starting to finally lose ground. And in the transplant world, they will not give me one without giving me the other.
You would do both?
I would have to get both if I get any at all in that step. So moving to dialysis will allow me to go on lists and start to be able to ask the questions. The challenge for me with that issue has been praying for – it wasn't hard to pray for a kidney, but it's pretty hard to pray for a heart. So I kind of don't do that. You know?
Because of the circumstances that would require.
Yeah, because you can kidney, you can get a living donor.
Right.
And I've had literally gracious offers of kidneys from everywhere. But I don't feel like asking God for a heart. It's just that, I don't know, that doesn't vibe with me very good. So I'm just trusting his plan. And every day, I have a cousin who just passed away, my hippie cousin, Rod, and he taught me this great principle. I just did his service a couple months ago. He started the day every day with please and ended the day with thank you. That was just his basic communing with God kind of ritual. And I get that. So, you know, my mornings, mine's kind of backwards. I start the morning, I open my eyes, and I'm like, thank you. I'm still here. Yeah. So the thank you thing, but I get the please too, you know, please make my life have meaning today as far as my interactions with people and tasks that I get to do, not that I have to do. That's a huge difference for me from being a doer now is I enjoy that I get to do things, where before I did enjoy it, but I was like driven to do things for whatever reasons.
You know? Source of your identity.
Yeah, make, you know, your identity. It's interesting. It's been a interesting journey. It's the only way I can put it. And my biggest thing is I want to finish well. That's that of anything. I have been trying to be a man of God and a Christian my whole life, and I've made tons of mistakes and have had to learn what grace means firsthand, not only giving it to others, but definitely needing a lot of it in my life. And I just, you know, I have pointed people towards this hope from platforms, stages, in one-on-ones, in coffee shops for my whole lifetime. Now the rubber's hitting the road in my life, and do I really put my money where my mouth is? And that matters to me because I do have that hope. And I want my kids and my grandkids to, that's the legacy that I want to leave them. Not that I was a fun DJ or I could lead a good worship song or, you know, was a self-made entrepreneur. Any of those kind of things don't really mean that much to me. They used to, but they don't anymore.
As Greg and I talked about life and future and this health reality, he said, I have, not I had, but I have a great life. As he has stepped back or laid down roles that have formed his identity in the past, he's had this opportunity to learn how to rest in his identity as a son of God. He says that's the best place to live from, whether it's a good day or a hard one. It is so clear that this man who has been so driven is a man at peace, even in the midst of many unanswered questions. Big thank you to Greg for sharing his story with us today. It takes a team to make each chapter of Epic. Thanks to Ted Ross and Jason Rackow for help with production. Thanks to Stephen Johnson for our theme music. I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.